Hi there, it's Charlotte. There were some technical gremlins this week, which means that on certain occasions in the show, I fear I sound like a bit of a robot. I've tried my best to clean it up, and I hope you still enjoy the show because there was an awful lot to talk about this week. Hello, and welcome to House of Comments. I'm Charlotte Henry, and soloing on this week with me is a under the weather Emma Bunnell. This is how committed you are to the show, Emma. You pulled yourself out of your...
Absolutely. Well, I've been back at work, as it were, for the last couple of days, but the beginning of the week I was very, very unwell.
See, heroic. This is heroic. This is our commitment to you.
Absolutely.
Emma, I'm glad you're here because we've got so much to start to talk about. It's been
Maybe it was on the fever dream, though, Charlotte. I just don't know.
It could have been. But I want to start with a gripe and a moan. I know this will surprise you because I'm not that kind of person. But I'm going to start with a moan. This is a long-term gripe of mine, and I think you're going to agree with me. I want to start with a tweet from Jeremy Hunt, where he talked about... Here's a quote. It wasn't a tweet. I saw it in a tweet, but it's a quote from him. He said, "We recognise just how tough things are for families across the country. We recognise just how tough things are for families across the country. So as we work towards getting inflation under control, we will help families with cost of living support worth £3,300 on average per household this year." Emma, can you work out what I'm annoyed about in that comment?
It's not as bad as the phrase hard-working families.
Right.
But... because always makes me think of putting kids up chimneys, but yeah.
Yes.
Those of us without children need support too, dude.
Single, child-free people. This has been the language of politics. I could have picked out comments from almost any political
area. Yeah, absolutely. Any party,
yep.
any politician, any faction within those parties.
Yeah. But it drives me mad. And actually, when it comes to inflation, you might well make the case that actually... single people who live alone, so often bear the brunt of this more. Single incomes, you know, by inflation.
Trying to pay the bills on this place on my own is impossible.
Well, you do live in a 4-bedroom mansion, so.
I mean, in North London.
Yeah, quite.
I do not live in any of them. I mean, I grew up with an N postcode, but right on the cusp of E. And
they
I
all
now...
the good people do. Good people do.
Absolutely.
But no, this type of stuff drives me mad. I wish politicians would stop it. I wish actually, particularly in the context of inflation and things like that, it's just so inappropriate and so doesn't it? It just doesn't fit what's actually the reality.
No, and it's also, I'm not entirely sure that those people who hear it don't feel quite patronised by it. So I'm not...
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
Like maybe it once had a job to do when I think there was a sense that there was almost an anti-family feeling. But I just... Like, it's been going on for so long now that that's insane. Just drop it and just say people.
Yes. Or households. Because households applies to
all sorts of configuration.
Anyway, thank you for letting me get that off my chest at the beginning of the show. I fear my anger is not going to decrease as we discuss the various things we have to discuss this week. I don't quite know where to start. I guess we should start with the absolute disgrace that is the Metropolitan Police.
Yeah.
We've touched on it before in the context of David Carrick, who was convicted of multiple rape, sexual offences, torturing women, you know, complete. And then, of course, it all followed the backlash from the horror of the Sarah Everard case. So we've now had the Baroness Casey review. She talked about a boys' club culture, institutional misogyny. I can't really unpick. I'm too angry almost to unpick, to put a coherent sentence together about it, which I appreciate is not that useful in this podcast, but it is an absolute disgrace what's been going on. And as ever, it seems to be women mostly that have been shoved to the bottom of the queue by this. There are absolutely, let's be very clear, stories of racism. There were some appalling anecdotes of how Sikh officers have been treated, which is just abysmal. There's obviously homophobia. There's one anecdote, one comment in the review, I think, was talking about the gay officer who did like kept away from his colleagues. There were officers saying they didn't want their families to have to require the net. I mean, I don't know where the hell to start here. Surely, is it? I think I've come to the conclusion that the Met probably does need to be broken up.
I just don't think it's... I mean, I think there's a wider problem with policing. I don't think it's just the Met, but I think the Met has a particular problem, partly in the way that it's set up with these elite units, and it kind of macho image that its counterterrorism strand gives it, and all, that makes it almost untouchable with all the other things that are going on. So I think the Met in particular needs to be broken up, but we also need to have a long and sustained and grown-up conversation about what policing is, who it should be done by, and how we attract those people, because at the moment we're getting that so badly wrong.
I think I'm struggling to find much to disagree with you on that, because we have a proud history in the UK, and is that, I mean, forgive my history if it's not accurate, but my understanding is that the Metropolitan Police was particularly found on this, was a proud history of policing by consent, is what I meant to say to finish the sentence, not a proud history of policing per se. That was always the point, hence why our officers do not carry firearms standardly. That was always the point.
Ask Yorkshire Police about that.
Yeah, you could ask. Yeah. No, I agree. I'm going way, way back. You're not going to get me defending any police unit on this show, I can promise you. The whole idea of British policing was unarmed and policing by consent, wasn't it?
Yeah. That was the idea, and it worked. And I think part of the problem is that we started to incorporate ideas of policing from America, which is absolutely not policing by consent.
I was thinking that you said it.
And, you know, so being a policeman became this macho thing to be. And it just became more and more a way for, in particular, men of a certain type to express their bullying through their job, their bullying nature through their job. And yeah, to their colleagues or to the people they're supposed to look after.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there was talking of behaviour towards colleagues. There was, I'm actually not going to repeat some of the stories about kind of initiation rituals and things, stories that we know, because this, of course, is a family show. Obviously, this is a politics show. Yeah, exactly. You know, Sadiq Khan released a very long statement. I won't read it all because I'll include it in the show notes. He is clearly furious about this. I mean, this is slightly one of those cases. I think, fair enough, he waited until the casing review was done, but I do want to see some action from him. As I understand, the Mayor of London is the Police and Crime Commissioner for London as well. Those two roles are the one in the same in London.
Yes, although I think there might be some complications because of the anti-terrorism unit.
Right, which again illustrates our point about breaking it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I just take this moment, listeners, to apologise to Charlotte, because I keep coughing and she has to edit this podcast, and I know I'm there for her.
Let me read actually just the end of Sadiq Khan's comments. Mm-hmm. I think it's important we get something from him. He said, "I want to assure Londoners that I'll be unflinching in my resolve to support and hold the new commissioner to account as he works over my force. And that has many committed professional police officers and staff who want to be part of this change. I see police reform as a critical part of my morality, and I will not be satisfied until Londoners have the police service they deserve, one that is trusted, representative, and delivers the highest possible service to every community in our city as we work towards a safer London for everyone." Now, I think that's all very well and good, and you know, you can't disagree with a single word he says there, but I want to see it in action. I thought Suella Braverman was a bit softer, although she's clearly on this as well now. I thought the response from Sir Mark Rowley, the commissioner, was a bit pathetic, actually. You know,
Well, it wasn't just pathetic, it was enraging. How dare you? It was semantics. We're not institutionally racist.
Yeah, he was arguing about the word institutional, wasn't he? And I think that must be because the Met is still very scarred by the institutional racism phrase that got stuck with post the Stephen Lawrence inquiry.
McPherson, yeah.
Correct.
Okay, fine. But you know what? This is what's been found. You're not contesting the details. You're arguing semantics.
Yep.
Give me a... If we're a family show, I won't say the next word. Right.
Yep, I completely agree. I think this is the type of... No, Baroness Casey is a deeply serious woman who has done deeply, deeply serious... Well, I've thought that.
And, oh, my God, she is so angry.
Angry, formidable, not messing around.
No, she really isn't.
You have to cut this up and just accept it.
I've watched her for quite some time because she's done a lot of work in areas that I've worked in. So, like, the Troubled Families programme was something that we looked at quite a lot when I was at a local government think tank, and she was big involved in that. So, you know, she's an interesting person. It's not someone I always agree with, but someone I've always respected.
But she did come across to me as someone you'd want to mess with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. She was, ferocious, I think was the right word.
Yeah, I mean, I can keep going on the things they found. A lunchbox found in a bridge that was contained rape samples, so everything had to be just... I mean, this is just appalling. And I think your point... Again, let's focus on the politics of this briefly. Because other people were more able than us deal on the home affairs and, you know, the logistics.
Yeah.
The politics of this is, I think we all would expect Sadiq Khan and Suella Braverman to actually be shown to make progress on dealing with this, not just excuse it. And this is right, the problem is right on politicians' doorstep, because the unit that protects politicians, the diplomatic political unit, whatever it's called, was found to be one of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
And part of this, from what I read, seemed to be these are boys with toys. It is male officers given very big guns, very senior access, very sensitive access, and basically to be able to get whatever they want.
Who goes into Parliament as regularly as you or I do will be just used to seeing police with machine guns.
But these are the officers. That's what Wade Cousins, the murder of Sarah Everard,
exactly.
Unit.
And there's more than one, I think, that's come out of that unit.
Was David Carrick from that unit as well? I think he
might
well
have
been.
Yeah, or at least passed through it. So, again, this is about how we attract these people. What is
into the most elite, one of the most elite units.
Yeah. And why, once they're found to be a problem, which both Cousins and Carrick had been, nothing was done about it. I mean, at least lose the working in the elite unit status.
Yeah. You know, even Mark Rowley, the commissioner, again, had to admit whilst responding to this, there's still people who are problematic within the Metropolitan Police. I mean, I think we could have worked that out anyway, but yeah, to say it out loud. So...
Well, I mean, he's basically doing quite a media job of just... Basically, he knows there's going to be somewhere like 1,000 cases coming up. And that's like, it's just going to keep coming. There are 1,000 disciplinary cases that could go to court.
Right. Look, it is too distressing. As women who live in London, it's just deeply worrying. I think, in a way,
Would you get into a police car with a male officer?
It's a big one. I don't know, and I don't know in what circumstances, and I understand why you're asking the question. I don't think I would anymore.
I think I would insist on waiting for a female officer.
I mean, I find it hard to disagree, and I think the problem is, as you walk around London now, you are looking at the people who are meant to protect you, and you're going, are you actually the person who's going to put me in danger? And I think that is just beyond horrific for all people in London, but for women in London.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to see some very serious change very quickly. Now, we described, I think quite rightly, Baroness Casey as a formidable woman. Talking of other formidable women, Boris Johnson thought we could get the better of Harriet Harman.
Never going to happen. Harriet is forensic. That's like, you know, she's a former barrister. I think.
Yeah, she was a, people know, but let's just be clear what we're talking about. Boris Johnson turned up at the Privileges Committee this week, finally, to try and explain, in inverted commas, why he didn't mislead the House of Commons and said that he didn't leave. But with COVID guidance and rules have been followed in Downing Street, Harriet Harman, who chairs the committee, was having none of it.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you can't bluster past Harriet Harman.
No, his main defence seemed to be, I couldn't have broken the rules because they don't apply to me. Downing Street's too difficult to apply the rules to, and we had to do these really hard things, so it was very important that we had leaving dues.
So, there is the nearest element of a case that, in the most difficult circumstances, keeping morale high is important. That is important. What is also important is leading from the front and setting an example to the country, i.e. we were all stuck in home, very miserable, alone, and they were having, look, we've all seen the past
Wine Time
stories.
Fridays.
Right. Snoop Casey from the co-op down Whitehall. Like, come on.
Yeah, there are other ways of keeping morale high.
Quite so.
The idea that you can only do that by having a lockdown rule-breaking party is insane.
We haven't really discussed party yet, so can we take 2 minutes, actually, because I think this is important, to discuss kind of Westminster culture and drinking culture within Westminster. Because I can sort of see, I mean, it's nonsense, and I'm furious about it, and I don't buy any of the excuses, but I can see how in Westminster they got confused between sitting at your desk, typing, and sitting at your desk having a drink, and it became work. Because you and I both know that drinking and chatting to people and being in the bars of Parliament is very part of Westminster working culture.
I mean, as someone who's quit drinking,
we're not very good people to drink about it, talk about this, because we basically don't drink.
It is noticeable how inculcated alcohol is into the Westminster world. But it is also noticeable that I've worked there 20 years and it's so much better than it used to be.
Also a very good point.
So it you know, if people are coming into Downing Street in 2019, most of them a lot younger than me, they wouldn't have been nearly as inculcated into that culture as they would have been if they'd been around in the 90s and the 2000s.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember working as an intern in Parliament all that long ago. Yeah, it was quite long ago. But, you know, walking down the stairs to the Sports and Social Bar in Parliament, it's all, it was patch on days. It is part of the working culture. So I can see where the confusion came, but it was just so inappropriate in the sense.
How can you be in those 2 years and not know that normal culture has largely been suspended?
Right, so because of the things you've set out and your rules.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. So let's return to the hearing. Boris had a haircut. Johnson had a nice haircut.
Yeah, no, it was so funny. So I watched it with my sister, at least the first bit. And my sister's not nearly as political as I am.
No, she's not. I'm normal.
She's much, much more normal and much happier for it.
Yeah.
But she's... she noticed that. She's like, he's brushed his hair for once.
Yeah, brushed his hair, wearing a proper suit, done up properly. He was trying to do the serious Boris Johnson thing.
Yeah.
And of course, the first thing he did was try and throw everyone else under the bus. He said, how can I be wrong and not everyone else be wrong, including the current Prime Minister?
Yeah, oh, but how many times did he mention Rishi Sunak? It was incredible.
As many as he could. He's obviously...
They clearly loathe each other.
Yeah. And he basically did the, if I'm going down, everyone is coming with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, throwing people.
It was very great. But, I mean, the Rishi Sunak thing's one thing, because he's another elected politician. But all of his staff, you know, constantly throwing Jack Doyle under the bus.
Yeah. Who was the head?
Why would anyone go and work for Boris? Because it never ends well.
No. And he was taking everyone with him, and it really is really cool. And, you know, it seemed to me, you maybe had, I had a lot to do that day, so maybe you watched it in a bit more forensic detail than I did, but it seemed to me that the committee was pretty united.
Mm.
They were not, you know, this is a committee of very serious politicians. We mentioned Harriet Harman Chariot. You know, Sir Bernard Jenkins has been in these roles for a long time.
Yeah,
he may be a conservative, but these are people that take their role and responsibilities to Parliament very seriously. Whatever that, you know, we don't have to like any of their politics.
No, but absolutely. I wouldn't agree with Bernard Jenkin on almost anything else, but he's a good select committee member. He, you know, he knows how the system works and what it's for.
They take their role to Parliament and their responsibilities to the institution very seriously. And they would not have time for people, as they see it, lying to the House. And for Boris Johnson to think he can send a dossier in late with typos, every editor at the Daily Telegraph who's ever dealt with it is now nodding. you know, it is disrespectful. It is a way of behaving like he is above it. He then comes into the Parliament, the hearing, thinking that he can just blaze through it as he does. So he's sort of claiming this is all in on. So he's got his allies briefing. This is a political witch hunt. It is just not the way to handle things. If you believe sincerely that you have done nothing wrong, which he is perfectly entitled to defend himself, deal with the system appropriately and respectfully.
Well, and speaking of which, the end of it, he seemed to infer that he would only deal with the system appropriately if it didn't find against him.
Right.
Which is not how these things work.
This is really not how these things work. You know, there was a bit at the beginning when he sort of accused it of being judge, jury, and, you know, he basically saying it's not right that the committee gets to decide everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, again, is just not right. That's how the system in Parliament works.
Yeah.
Politicians hold their peers to account.
It's also, frankly, not how it would work either, because what they would do is make a recommendation to Parliament.
Correct.
Parliament would have the final say.
So let's actually talk about how this is going to play out. So obviously, the committee, as you say, can make recommendations to Parliament up to, you know, including suspension of X number of days.
Yeah, yeah.
10 days or more, you automatically face a recall petition. And that basically, particularly in this case, would guarantee a by-election,
which
the threshold
the
would be met.
Are likely to lose.
Which he would almost certainly lose should he decide to front up and stand.
I suspect that they will find him to have
misled the House.
I suspect they will recommend a shorter suspension.
Yes.
To avoid the... Because although they are trying to take the politics out of it as much as possible, there are politics in it. And this is a Conservative majority committee who will not want to push a by-election onto the Conservative Party. I think the Labour members of the committee will be understanding of that and actually not want to see that fight between the Borisites and the non-Borisites kick off because of this. I think that I think a shorter suspension just looks less bad on everyone.
As we said, that's in quite a uniting way.
Yeah.
So I don't think you're going to have, it doesn't seem that Harriet Harman and the Labour politicians on there are going to put, no, let's get a making face of by-election, 10 days, 11 days, whatever.
Yeah.
I think the idea is to make the point, suspension from the House, my guess is somewhere between 5 days and seven.
Yeah, yeah.
Serious enough that you've made the point.
I mean, it's worth remembering that what started Boris Johnson's downfall
It was him.
Not Partygate. It, well, was him, yeah, of course. It was Owen Paterson.
Yes, 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 yes.
And Boris Johnson trying to bend the rules to stop Owen Paterson getting what would have been a fairly minor suspension.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And then rolling back, annoyed all his backbench engineers. And that, as you say, rightly started the dominoes that brought him ultimately to an end without a Downing Street. And actually, I was slightly reminded when I watched his opening statement of his statement outside Downing Street, because on neither occasion did he act with humility.
No.
On neither occasion did he take responsibility for the things that had gone wrong on his watch whilst pretending he was doing so.
Yeah.
And it's nonsense, and it's all the kind of worst characteristics of him. And he thinks he's going to charm this committee. He thinks he's either going to charm or bulldoze this committee into extricating him from, you know, a punishment. And I just don't see any circumstances which that's going to happen.
He also, here's the thing he kept doing, which he wasn't supposed to, was naming the people whose parties they were. So the leaving people who were leaving.
Yes, that. Yes, yes.
And he was told several times not to do that. And he's not an idiot.
No,
he pretends to be sometimes for political reasons, but he's not an idiot. So that felt like, why is he doing that? What? Yeah, and it felt like some sort of coded message.
Well, I return to my earlier point that I think his whole strategy throughout this inquiry and particularly on this hearing was to bring everyone down with him.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
And I think it is bizarre because, as you said, people want to work with him. And he is not someone that doesn't want to stay in politics. I think
this is all about him desperately clinging on. If he just left Parliament of his own accord, which, you know, ex-Prime Ministers frequently do, you know, he could go off and earn all this money that he wants to earn. And they would have cancelled, didn't you? They wouldn't have kept put all the resources into the committee hearings because it wouldn't have mattered.
I've also seen some columnists sort of trying to take the line, should we forget about all this? Let's move on.
Mm-hmm.
And I simply can't agree with that, because whatever your view on lockdown, whatever your view on how Boris Johnson's government handled the COVID crisis, if there's ever a time for parliamentary inquiry, for parliamentary scrutiny, for public inquiry and public scrutiny, that has to be right. Because if nothing else, we have to learn how to deal, if God forbid, there is another pandemic or major health crisis in this country and the world. The idea that I need to think about this, though, God, that was a let's move on, is ridiculous.
Yeah, completely ridiculous.
So you and I are both going 5 to 7 days. We've opened the spread bit. Listeners, tweet us at House HOT Podcast. We'd love to hear what your predictions are for this. I think, as I said, I think it's really important this all gets done. So yeah, at HOT Podcast, let us know what you think would or should happen as a, you know, an outcome of this privileges committee investigation. Emma, the SNP leadership election is still going on. It's almost as long as the Labour leadership election.
To be fair, it's not actually been that long. It's about 3 or 4 weeks. There's a lot happened in those 3 or 4 weeks.
It just feels like it's been a long time. So you may find out by the time you're listening to this, who is the leader of the SNP. Because it's announced on Monday.
We're about to give massive hostages to fortune, are we?
Massive. Absolutely huge. It's always a really intelligent thing to do on a podcast. Monday the 27th, it's announced. We've seen Nicola Sturgeon kind of leaving statements. Really, 2 minutes, what do you think her kind of reputation, her legacy is as First Minister?
TBD, I think.
Oh, interesting.
As a politician, I think her reputation is very formidable. She was an incredibly...
There's been a theme on this show today.
Yeah. She clearly the party is struggling to exist without her. she is someone who kept the party together with an iron grip. That may be part of the problem, but certainly as a politician, I think her reputation is very much sealed. As a first minister, again, I come back to what I've said several times on this. Look at every indicator in Scotland. You know, she may have increased support for independence. That too is questionable at the moment. But, you know...
Well, yeah, I'm going to have not as, actually. I see some polling that shows some wavering on that now.
I mean, it has been wavering since the GRA bill
yes.
and Nicola Sturgeon's resignation. So yeah, that has, but she kept it going after a referendum in which they lost by 10 points.
She absolutely kept the show on the road.
Yeah, so I think that was impressive. But yeah, as I say, every indicator of actually running Scotland well is not good.
I find it hard to disagree with anything you've said. She obviously is a pretty tough, powerful, well-organised politician. But I'm not sure you can make a case that she's leaving Scotland better than when she took over at the House.
And she has run the party for a long time. Her husband's chief executive of the party.
Oh, hasn't he left?
He might have left, yes. I think you might be right. I mean, yeah, resigned or pushed is the question. But
yeah.
He was in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so that's been very messy and a very messy end to her time. So
yeah. And that, again, is TBD because there's still an investigation into that money.
Right. Let's do it. Who's going to be the next First Minister of Scotland, Arabella?
I mean, I think having said all of that about Nicola Sturgeon and the grip she has on her party, it's been made very clear that her preferred successor is Humza Yousaf. 30,000 members left the party in 1 year. I don't think those are the ones who were happy with Nicola Sturgeon.
No.
So just in terms of political calculation, I think it's probably Humza Yousaf.
Yeah.
I
think it has to be Humza Yousaf as well. We haven't seen, look, there was all the controversy around Kate Forbes at the beginning of, it's kind of died down. I'm not convinced she's ever recovered. And it really cost her campaign a bit of momentum, from what I could tell, all the fuss at the beginning.
I mean, I think the problem that... So, in the 2015 Labour leadership contest, right?
Yes.
You had four candidates.
Yes.
Three of whom were saying, I would be the best leader of this country. And one of whom was saying, I'm like you, the membership, and I want to be the membership's candidate. Now, I think Kate Forbes has made the mistake of trying to appeal to the Scottish electorate and not the selectorate that she has to get through first.
Yeah, you have to be one stage at a time, don't you? Yeah, they both come from Kate Forbes and held senior positions in the Scottish government. Ash Regan, to me, doesn't seem to have made any kind of impact.
No, she's made no headway at all, as far as I can tell.
Okay, so we're both going, Humza Yousaf. Speak to you next Friday when we both got this completely wrong. This is the First Minister of Scotland. Emma, I hope you feel better. Where can we talk about with you in the meantime?
My Substack, which I didn't do because I was unwell, but will be doing again this weekend, is... Hard Thinking on the Soft Left, and I'm on Twitter at @EmmaBurnell_.
I'm at Charlotte N. Henry on Twitter, and if you want to find me talking about media and entertainment and tech, it's theaddition.substack.com. As I mentioned, you can follow us at the HMC podcast on Twitter as well. Please, we love hearing from you. We love hearing topics you want us to discuss on the show. So please drop us a line there, and we'll see you next week.